This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Snuck back in behind the net. Here's Wheeler for the empty net. Wheeler shoots and scores! How about a five-point night for Blake Wheeler? A goal and four helpers. That should salt it away. 5-2 Winnipeg.
5-2. The Jets defeating the Colorado Avalanche last night at Bell MTS Place. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. We, of course, start with last night's Jets-Avalanche game. The Jets finally back in action. Seems like the first time in about a month since we've seen the team play, certainly here on home ice. And the Jets were full value for their victory last night over division rival Colorado Avalanche by that 5-2 margin, led by Blake Wheeler with his four assists and one goal on the evening.
Cinco
de Novembro?
Yes.
Okay.
What a game from Blake Wheeler, boys. You know, after a week off, a pretty good effort, right? Because that was the big question coming into this game, right? You know, were the Jets going to be able to keep up the speed from the two games in Finland? Certainly, you know, in the first game, I thought they were really flying. And then maybe, you know, towards the end of that second game, you know, the Jets started to get a little bit tired with two games and two nights, right? But, you know, a very good effort from the Jets right from the puck drop. And you mentioned Blake Wheeler, Drew, and, you know, he has the 5 points. But, you know, I thought overall, you know, the Jets were just the hungrier team, as I mentioned. And, you know, they get the early power play goal, and it seems quite automatic these days, especially at home. You know, you had a power play goal 7 seconds in for Kyle Connor, and then Patrick Laine was eight seconds in, or maybe it was the reverse.
No,
but the point is, they scored early on their power play, right? So, you know, Connor gets the nice tap in. I thought Mark Scheifele was just sensational last night, and I thought he could have easily had 5 points. I think he ended up with three, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe something
A goal and two assists.
Yeah.
So he was fantastic. And, you know, Connor Hellebuck, you know, that Eric Johnson goal, people are criticizing Hellebuck for that goal. But, I mean, that was just a nice individual effort. And sure, you know, maybe the Jets gave Eric Johnson a little too much space. But, you know, it was a nice individual effort, a nice shot. And the big point here is when the Avalanche scored, when Eric Johnson scored, the Jets scored shortly after. And then when Tyson Joe scored, the Jets scored shortly after. It was Nikolaj Ehlers that scored after Johnson, and then it was Laine on the power play after Tyson Joe. So there was a response shortly after, 3 or 4 minutes after the Avalanche scored. The Jets made sure that the Avalanche weren't going to come back in this game. And the goal that stands out to me, guys, is the 4-2 goal. And, you know, Blake Wheeler,
That's the Laine power play goal.
Right. Or sorry, it was the third goal, pardon me, that the Jets scored where Nathan MacKinnon,
the game-winning goal, Nikolaj Ehlers on the tap-in. Yes.
Sorry, that was the goal I was going to talk about. Nathan MacKinnon, at his own blue line, decides for some reason to dipsy doodle and think that he can, you know, just go around Blake Wheeler. Blake Wheeler just strips the puck from him and, you know, feeds Nikolaj Ehlers with a beautiful pass. And to me, that really summed up how good Wheeler was. It wasn't just Wheeler, you know, feeding Laine and Scheifele or Connor on the power play. Wheeler's all-around game last night was fantastic.
Coming into the game, Dave, a lot of the talk was about how good the Avalanche MGM line had been this season. Mikko Rantanen, Gabriel Landeskog, Nathan MacKinnon. So I have to believe that Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele and the Jets' big guns probably took that as a little bit of a challenge, saying, you know, all the talk is about how great the Avalanche have been. Let's change the storyline at the end of the game, and let's dominate the game. And I thought Ezzy made a great point, because I was going to bring that up as well, is about every time the Avalanche punched the Jets counterpunched pretty quickly thereafter, and it was really one of the best performances I think we've seen from the Jets all season long last night.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially, you know, if you want to talk about complete efforts, I think that was a complete 60-minute effort that, you know, folks have been looking for from this Winnipeg Jets team. So, you know, the importance of beating divisional rivals, we talk about it and it seems early in the season, it's only November, but, you know, you just really can't put when you're looking at, you know, Nashville already at 24 points, I think, and you've got Minnesota at 22, the Jets are now at 19. So, I mean, that's the thing. You need to keep these wins going Colorado comes in. They were 0-3-1 at the time. Now they're 0-4-1. But the fact is that, you know, Colorado plays a pretty aggressive game. They're pretty, their defense is a little bit questionable sometimes. Varlamov's play on the Scheifele goal. I mean, I'm still not entirely sure why he decided to put himself. I know he plays deep in the net.
Yeah.
But I mean, like he essentially helped Scheifele by putting himself into the net and giving the Jets that goal. But, I really thought, you know, it was really about the process last night. And last night, we just saw a Jets team that really played again, there were some mistakes made. Obviously, you can't play a completely flawless game.
Myers and Trouba would like to have that their defensive positioning back on the Johnson goal because he sort of
neither guy
took him and they just sort of let him walk right in.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, like there obviously wasn't a completely flawless game, but it was as good a 60-minute game as we've seen from this Jets team. And if it's any indication as to what they're going to bring moving forward, it's a good sign of things to come.
And Dave, how big was the penalty kill last night? Like, we talk about the power play a lot, and the Jets now have the top-ranked power play.
Yeah.
I was saying that last week. It was just a matter of time before the Jets were number one. They were number two for a long time, but
34.8% now through 15 games, a power play goal in 11 straight games.
It's incredible, and at home, it's even better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, what are they, at 40% at home? Something ridiculous like that, right?
Yeah.
But it's not just the power play, the special teams, and I mentioned this to Dave. We were up in the press box yesterday. Buff takes that roughing penalty against Sam Girard.
And I realized,
you know, Paul Maurice won't be happy with that, but, you know, I love that from Buff. He was engaged in that game. You know, he was one of the three stars last night, but not only did the Jets kill off that penalty, Drew, but I thought a big part of that game was in the second period after Nick Petan, if you remember, took that holding penalty on Sam Girard. He got his hand out on Sam Girard.
Offensive zone penalty. Not a good penalty for Petan to take in that situation.
Right. Whenever you have that free hand and you put it on opposing players' shoulder like that, it's an easy call, right? Not only did the Jets kill that penalty off, but shortly after, it was actually a 1 second 5-on-3.
Yes.
And then the Jets killed off Buff's tripping penalty that I don't even know if the Avs had a shot on net. I'd have to go back and look, but I don't think they had a shot on net.
I don't think they did, because I'm fairly certain I remember you saying, I don't think they got a shot on net.
Never. I think the Jets had shorthanded opportunities on that second. I think that was where Tanev came in with Kopp, I believe, on a 2-on-1.
And Tanev and Kopp were great, and also Scheifele and Wheeler.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're talking about here, guys. Scheifele and Wheeler got it done at even strength, and the Jets have been criticized a lot this year for their lack of production at 5-on-5. But Scheifele, Wheeler got it done at 5-on-5. They got it done on the penalty kill, and they got it done
on the power play.
Right. And I agree with you. MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog, you know, that's the most dangerous offensive line in the league right now. But I think Scheifele and Wheeler badly outplayed them.
And
Ehlers. I mean, we have to mention Ehlers, too. He had a strong game.
He did. There's no question about it. I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly that the Jets' top line outplayed the Avs' top line. And then you knew that coming into the game, the Jets had an advantage depth-wise on the other forward lines. And I thought, you know, all the forward lines were impressive or had good opportunities. I mean, in that first period, Patrick Laine himself had a few opportunities at even strength with Tanev and with Lowry. One of them, I think he walked right in and he probably had a little more time than he thought. And Varlamov made a nice save on him. But the Jets were the better of the team in basically all aspects of the game, which isn't something we've been able to say on a consistent basis this year. It was a very impressive effort back on home ice. You knew that the Jets would probably come out strong, given that they've had the week off, given that Colorado has been struggling a little bit, given that the team was certainly sick of practicing, having practiced 3 days in a row, and the Jets matched what people expected from them early in the game.
Right, guys, and I would say the only negative from my perspective, or something that maybe you don't like to see, is, again, Nick Petan and Jack Roslovic only got 5 minutes of ice time. And I realize, Drew, that part of that has to do with the fact that the Jets were killing off some penalties there late in the second period, and then, you know, Little took a slashing penalty there. You know, in the first period, Kopp had a really good scoring chance, if you remember. Petan fed Kopp in front of the net. That was really early in the game. So I thought that line looked really good early on, but then as the game progressed, and sure, you know, you're protecting a lead, so you're going to use your fourth line less. So that's just one observation I had. I would have liked to have seen Petan and Roslovic more in that game.
That's something we've been able to say all season long when it comes to the Jets' fourth line, and that's something I'm sure Paul Maurice is still trying to work those guys in and get them, you know, more consistent ice time. Wasn't going to be last night, unfortunately. A little bit of a question mark going forward about the health of Dmitry Kulikov. He certainly looked like he hurt his arm in the second period there. He didn't play the remainder of the game. The Jets were down to five defensemen. No update on his status from Paul Maurice, but we'll see what happens today or tomorrow leading up to the game against the Devils tomorrow night, Dave.
Yeah, his exact quote was, "I've got nothing for you." This is after the game. "I've got nothing for you right now." He couldn't return. It might be precautionary, but we'll get him to test it out tomorrow, and then we'll know.
Yeah.
Which, of course, doesn't really tell us anything, but...
I'd be surprised if we see him tomorrow against the Devils. That would be my impression based on how he left the ice and sort of holding his arm.
It was a very interesting play because, I mean, like as I said, we were in the press box and I watched it, and it, you know, even on the replay, it seemed very innocuous. But
it happened. I was in seats last night. It happened right in front of me, and he got jolted into the boards pretty good.
Right.
And then you saw him.
It looked like a shoulder. I thought it was a shoulder, but I mean, again,
it was something in the arm region, elbow, whatever.
He left the ice.
You're not a doctor, but you'll take a look.
Basically, that's what I'm saying. Exactly. I play a doctor on radio when need be.
Yeah, and he left the ice immediately, went right to the room, and it was, you know, I mean, the Jets announced in the first intermission that he wasn't coming back for the second or for the remainder of the game.
Yeah.
So you'd have to think that the Jets will make a call down to the Moose, perhaps.
Tucker Poolman likely to come up. Joe Morrow back in the lineup. We'll see what happens with that. The Jets obviously back in action tomorrow night against the Devils. Let's talk about Josh Morrissey's quote from Blake Wheeler last night. I mean, Wheeler, we know, we talked about it, the four assists, the one goal. He was absolutely dominant. This is what Josh Morrissey had to say last night about Blake Wheeler.
Yeah, Blake took it to another level. He's a guy that drives, you know, our bus every single day in practice, in the gym, you know, basically in every aspect of being a professional hockey player. He's the guy that that we follow. And tonight I drove to the game with him. You could tell he was ready to go, and he definitely took it to another level. He's just he's a big guy, obviously, that has so much skill, and competes so hard. And like I said, he was the heartbeat of our team out there as far as, you know, competing. And to have a big night like that, he definitely deserved it. You know, I know Wheels pretty well. We drive to the games together sometimes, and I don't know. I just had a feeling. I think we've had a break, and we were both pretty excited to actually, you know, along with, I'm sure, the rest of our team, get back to playing a game again here after not playing for a bit. And I just had a feeling he's been really on it the last few days in practice, and I think he wants to again talk about identity. That's our guy right there leading the way. So all of those things combined, that's what we saw tonight.
The heart and soul of the Winnipeg Jets, Blake Wheeler, with a great performance last night. Josh Morrissey singing his praises post game.
I want to know who drives. Like, is it Blake that drives, or do you think Josh, because he's the younger player, do you think he picks Wheeler up?
I would imagine that based on my guess is Morrissey picked Wheeler up.
Right.
That's just what I'm assuming, but right. I don't necessarily know. I think we can all agree it's good that they didn't take Uber. Obviously, you can't take Uber in Winnipeg, but we're not privy to the conversations that happened in that vehicle, and that's probably a good thing if the Ottawa Senators are any lesson from earlier this week.
No, but seriously, I mean, Josh Morrissey obviously had a fantastic game. We know he's one of the Jets' top defensemen. I think he's the Jets' best defenseman. We've seen some fantastic games from Blake Wheeler over the years.
Mm-hmm.
It's now 8 years that we've been watching Wheeler. Last year was his best year. Easily could have been Hart Trophy finalist last year with his 91 points. And, you go back to last year, remember the hat trick against the Pittsburgh Penguins? That was one of his best games of his career. But last night, coming off of that, 6-day break,
mm-hmm.
that might have been his best game ever. And,
it was points wise, first career five point game.
But you know what I mean, though, Drew? Like, some games after the game's over, you look and you see, okay, a player had four assists, but Blake Wheeler was clearly the best player on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some good players on the ice. Like, you've got Nathan MacKinnon out there, Gabe Landeskog, Mikko Rantanen, Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine. Wheeler elevated his game. And that's coming off of a 6-day break. When we talk about all the criticism the Jets have received, that they're lucky to be 8-5-1, obviously 9-5-1 now, but they've been struggling at 5-on-5. And, Blake Wheeler did drive the bus last night.
And major milestone, hit his 400th career NHL assist.
There you go. More on Blake Wheeler. It's funny, coming off a five-point night, he was named as one of the top three underrated players in the league. When we come back, what's it going to take for Blake Wheeler to get his due as one of the NHL's top players? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Wheeler out in front for Scheifele. A shot blocked in front. Rebound. They score! Your side out in front, and a shot, they score! Scheifele on a quick little tic-tac-toe play. Morrissey, Wheeler, and Scheifele, a McKinnon at center ice. He turned it over. Wheeler stomps inside the zone. Wheeler moves in. Wheeler out in front. Now a backhand shot. They score! Nikolai Ehlers had to wait everybody out, including Wheeler's pass. Bufflin out in front of the shot. They score! Patrick Laine off the faceoff. Wheeler shoots and scores! How about a five-point night for Blake Wheeler?
A dominating performance last night by the Winnipeg Jets captain, Blake Wheeler, increasing his point total to up to 21 points on the season in only 15 games played. Second most assists now behind the Colorado Avalanche's Mikko Rantanen, and he's up to 18 assists on the season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 in this segment of the show, brought to you by our good friend Dr. Les Rikus and his team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. I was happy enough to run into Les at last night's game, so it was always good to see our buddy Les. Don't be an Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Blake Wheeler, last night, 5 points. On the same night that NHL.com comes out with a poll that lists him as the third most underrated player in the entire NHL. The only players who are more underrated, according to other NHL players, are Alex Barkov of the Florida Panthers and Nicklas Backstrom of the Washington Capitals. The idea that Blake Wheeler is underrated is one that we've talked about on the show for a lot of years now. So the question I have for you guys, coming off of a 91-point season, currently, you know, top, one of the top players in the NHL in terms of points for so far this season, coming off a Western Conference Finals berth for the Winnipeg Jets, what's it going to take for Blake Wheeler to no longer be underrated?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And, you know, he's certainly not underrated on this show, and he's certainly not underrated in the city of Winnipeg or by Jets fans. But last year's 91-point performance, I think, was a wake-up call for the rest of the league, because, you know, this is a guy who's been on the American Olympic team. He's put up really solid point totals for the Jets over the last 4 or 5 years. When you talk about, you know, those assists, and is it any coincidence that Blake Wheeler had 4 assists against Mikko Rantanen, who was leading the league in assists? It's almost like he elevated his game knowing that he was going up against the player who had 19 assists. Right?
I believe so, that.
To answer your question, Drew, there's some pretty good right-wingers in the NHL right now. I think a lot of people would say Nikita Kucherov is the top right-winger in the game, or maybe Patrick Kane is the top right-winger in the game. But if those two are ahead of Blake Wheeler, they're not that far ahead of Blake Wheeler, and I would argue that he is right up there. And it's not just points. I mean, everybody likes to look at the point totals. But, I mean, right now, I think you're watching Joe Thornton. I mean, Joe Thornton has been one of the best playmakers in the game, including on the power play. And I think Blake Wheeler is the best playmaker in the game right now. He's the best passer passing forward in the NHL right now. I have no problem saying that. And, again, we might be biased here in Winnipeg because we watch him every game. But look what he does on the power play. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's in control. When he has the puck there, he can go to Laine, he can go to Scheifele. If he wants to go to the point to Buff, he can. And Connor's close to the goaltender there, coming from the goal line. I mean, he controls everything. His vision is incredible. So he can beat you with his speed. He can beat you with his vision. Mm-hmm. I think he's got an underrated shot. Speaking of Blake Wheeler being underrated, I mean, obviously he's not known as being a 40-goal guy, but he's got a good shot. And, you know, he obviously is pass-first when it comes to the power play, and pass-first in general. He likes to set up, whether it's Connor or Scheifele or Ehlers. But he is elite, and he is one of the best right-wingers in the game. And he's one of the best overall forwards in the game.
You know, it's funny, you know, you talk about the power play success, and obviously that's where a lot of Blake Wheeler's points have come so far this year, because 5-on-5 Wheeler, and I mean, maybe they had a breakout game yesterday, it's too early to tell, but they were certainly better 5-on-5 than they had been for a lot of games. But, you know, and there's an article talking about how the Jets and how Wheeler and Scheifele in particular are having trouble getting into the high danger scoring areas so far this season. If Wheeler gets back into those high-danger scoring areas where he had such success last year, and you would expect that he will, his numbers are only going to go up again significantly. Right now, he's doing a lot of what he's done so far on the power play or in assists from not typical scoring areas. When the offense gets clicking again, as I personally expect that it will because it's too good to not, watch out again for Blake Wheeler and what their numbers are going to do for the Jets' offensive powerhouses, Dave.
Yeah, and Blake Wheeler acknowledged, like, I mean, he talked about it last night in his post-game scrum about how it's nice to have tools like he does in Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, Dustin Byfuglien. You know, the list goes on and on. Josh Morrissey. I mean, these are all guys who have, you know, tremendous offensive gifts. So the fact is that he doesn't want to take a lot of the credit for what's happening. But obviously, you know, he does, like Josh Morrissey said, drive the bus on this team. He's the captain, and you can see it. Now, what's interesting is a lot of his assists are primary assists. He's not getting a lot of secondary. I think last night he only had one on the Connor goal, I think, from Scheifele, which was a nice pass to Scheifele, too. Yeah.
Scheifele usually scores that without it having to go to Connor. Right. Scheifele sort of fanned on the shot.
Right, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, he has offensive gifts are well known, and as he just kind of touched on most of them. I think, you know, to your question, Drew, or your original question, I think it's a function of the market. I mean, we think of Winnipeg as like a hockey crazy market, and it is, but the reality is Winnipeg isn't Toronto. It's not Montreal. It's not New York. It's not one of the bigger markets in the NHL. It doesn't draw national attention to the same degree. Obviously, you know, there was a game here with the Leafs that was on NHL on NBC and all that stuff, and it became a big thing. But the fact of the matter is that you can't suggest that Winnipeg is in the
Blake Wheeler's performance last night gets overshadowed by the Leafs beating the Devils 5-1 or 6-1 or whatever the score was.
It is what it is. I mean, like, I'm not suggesting that it won't be recognized. I'm just saying that it doesn't have the same impact as what happens if a player has a 5-point night. A player of Blake Wheeler's caliber having a 5-point night and having that kind of impact on a game as it would in a bigger market that is more, you know, let's just call it a sexier market than maybe Winnipeg is. Now, we've seen that Winnipeg, with the talent they've accumulated, has become a more interesting subject for, you know, networks and news. But the fact of the matter is, it still is what it is. And so, to your question, ultimately, if you ask me, I would think that either a Stanley Cup appearance or a Stanley Cup championship will really cement Blake Wheeler in that role as one of the top wingers in the game.
Right. And he's on the cusp right now, right? What did he finish in Hart Trophy voting last year? What was he, fifth or sixth? I forget what it was, Drew. I'd have to look it up, but I mean, you're talking about an elite player. He's an absolute elite player. And, you know, I agree. It's not just Toronto. I mean, the Winnipeg Jets don't get as much attention as teams like the Kings or the Hawks or the Rangers. But when you think about it,
Wheeler was eighth last year in Hart Trophy voting.
There you go. He's a player that, when you think about how his game has grown, you just expect Blake Wheeler to get a point every night. You expect him most nights, actually, to get more than a point. You know, that says a lot about a player. If a player is struggling and he's a point a game,
yeah, it's a pretty good.
He's doing something right.
Yeah, here's Jamie McLennan last night on TSN SportsCenter talking about Blake Wheeler, talking about his performance last night and sort of Wheeler as a player and the appreciation level.
I really do. I think that Blake Wheeler doesn't get enough love for the types of player he is, the details that he brings to his game, and the leadership that he shows. Now, skill set on display. He's an outstanding passer. You just heard Paul Maurice talk about what he's been able to do. But the bigger part when I look at Blake Wheeler's game is he's got a great shot. He's big. He's strong. And he plays in every situation. So power play, penalty kill, hound dogs the puck, turns it over. So opportunity to shoot? No. Find the back door, and Nikolaj Ehlers slides it in. So this is the type of guy who is, for me, a five-tool player, because he can do everything he can as far as help you win a game, whether he's physical, whether he has to drop his gloves to back up a teammate, but he also props up his teammate. So it's leading by example, and Blake Wheeler, his game was on display tonight.
I like that description from Jamie McLennan last night. He's a five-tool player. That's sort of a reference you hear more in baseball, where a guy who's, you know, can do it all on the defensive and the offensive side of things. But Blake Wheeler, in terms of hockey, I mean, this is a guy who's also pretty much on their number one penalty-killing unit. You know, you get power play time where you're dominant. You get 5-on-5 time where he was dominant last night. And then you throw him out with Mark Scheifele on the penalty kill, which has been pretty good for the Jets this year. A few blips in certain games. You know, Blake Wheeler truly is, you know, one of those all-around players who's performing at an incredible level at all of those different areas, Dave.
No, and I think it, you know, he's justifying his contract, which sometimes you think it weighs on a player a little bit. You know, he signs a big deal. Does he have to earn that contract?
And hasn't even kicked in yet.
Well, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
The idea is that he signed it, and so there's a lot of thought like, oh, now I've got to play up to that. And you don't know how much of a factor that becomes. And we know that it does for some players become a factor. So it's something to consider. But again, like I said, and like as he said earlier in the segment, the fact is that, you know, we saw Blake Wheeler just jump his game from you know, the previous seasons where he had, you know, 270 point seasons or 70 plus point seasons into the 90s. And you know, it looks like this year he's going to hit somewhere similar again?
He's well on his way to that. When we come back, Scott Billick covers the Winnipeg Jets for NHL.com. He joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, along with some Moose news and audio, is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He is the Winnipeg Jets correspondent for NHL.com. You've also read his work in the Winnipeg Sun and on Pro Hockey Talk. He's our good friend, Scott Billick. Scott, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. Scott, we've been spending most of the first 30 minutes of the program talking about last night's contest and talking about the performance of Blake Wheeler and some of the Jets' other top guns. Coming into the game, all the discussion was about the Avalanche and their top line of Rantanen, MacKinnon, and Landeskog. Do you think the Jets' top players maybe took, not offense, but maybe used all that pregame discussion about how good the Avs have been as motivation last night?
Maybe a little bit. I think the Jets players knew coming into the game, especially the top line of the Winnipeg Jets, knew they were going to see that line quite a bit last night. And when they saw it, they knew that, you know, likely, if given the history so far this season with Colorado and how well they've done when that line is clicking, if they were able to shut that line down, they'd have put themselves in a good opportunity to win, and I believe that you know, we saw that last night in the game. I believe that, you know, the Jets top line came out and everybody, you know, from Jacob Trouba and everybody. I mean, there was a concerted effort last night to make sure that line didn't create a lot of chances. After two periods, they didn't even have one high danger scoring chance on the Jets. And, you know, the Jets had racked up a two-goal lead at that point. So, I think it was job done. And I think if the motivation, just to answer your question, was there, you know, maybe it was, you know, I don't know if you want to call it bulletin board material or locker room material, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, the Jets players knew what they needed to do. Stop that line and give yourself a good chance to win. And that's probably the motivation that you need, knowing that, you know, to get the W and to get back to winning ways and to start off this, whatever you want to call it, second half of the season, the new start of the season, whatever it is after Finland, they needed to go out there and take care of business against that line. And I believe they did that. And I think, you know, if you're looking for a source of motivation, I think that was it.
Scotty, Patrick Laine scored another goal last night, and it was a power play goal, but, you know, Lowry, Tanev, and Laine, they had another good game last night. Is it possible that line stays together maybe longer than we initially thought?
Well, yeah, and, you know, I asked Paul Maurice about that in the pregame, after the pregame skate yesterday morning, and you know, he was like, well, you know, if Laine gets going and it makes sense to move the lines back to kind of what they were, the TLC line, and put Connor back up, and then get, once Laine, basically what he was saying is once Laine got going, they would have options as to where to put him. I think that line has, you know, exceeded probably expectations of what you thought it would be. I mean, when you kind of look at it at a different level, given, you know, that you have Adam Lowry and Brad Atana, that both those guys are going to run into the corners, they're going to go and find and go and grab the puck. And then that leaves, you know, Laine as your F3 or your other forward that can kind of work his way into the slot. But I think what you've seen with Patrick Laine is he's kind of started to play at that pace of those other two around him. And that's obviously made him a better player. If you look at what that line's been able to do in terms of just, you know, possession numbers and stuff like that, it's worked rather well. I think they're sitting at like a 55% Corsi rating after, I guess, what you now, it's been three games played together. You know, those are pretty good numbers from a line where you weren't maybe getting that with Laine before on a line with the Ehlers or whatever. This line starts from the back and works its way forward and is generating scoring chances because of their defensive play. And I think if there's any knock on Patrick Laine, it's never been his offensive prowess. It's always been, you know, what happens on the defensive side of the game. And I think Patrick Laine's been playing more defensively in the last two or three games, and that's translated into, you know, just making him a better all-around player and just getting more chances. I mean, he's learning from these other two, Brandon Tanev and Adam Lowry, how you can incorporate a defensive game and still produce offense. And I think, I mean, that's the type of thing that you want to see from Patrick Laine as he kind of morphs into a complete package, I suppose, in the NHL.
You know, Scott, we're not seeing a lot of time on ice for that fourth line, and obviously Andrew Kopp is getting time when he's on the penalty kill, but the fact is that Jack Roslovic played 5 minutes, Nick Petan played 5 minutes. Do you think that's a viable option for the Jets to only really run three lines for the remainder of the season?
No, I think last night might have, the game might have dictated that. So, you know, they didn't get a whole lot of time, I guess, through the first two. But you're nursing a two-goal lead, and you want to make sure that, the Jets have talked about that. I mean, you know, playing with, a two-goal lead or a 2-1 lead and still winning games. And then when it starts to go a little bit pear-shaped in the third period there, as it did, and you know, it goes to 2-1, and then the Jets score on power play, make 3-1, and then, you know, it goes to 3-2, and then they score again. You know, there's not a lot of time afforded to a fourth line in those situations with a few power plays in there and that sort of thing. So you want to see them playing more, of course. I mean, that would be the ideal thing. But you have to also remember, you know, they are a fourth line. They're not going to get the same minutes as, the first three, and especially in some of those situations. But you're hoping that, you know, especially a guy like Jack Roslovic and even Nick Petan and Andrew Kopp, you know, are going to get more minutes than that. But just because that line now seems to have, you know, it's perceived that it has a lot more skill on it than say the days of, you know, when Chris Thorburn or whoever was on the line, right? So there's skill on that line and skill that you want to keep developing, especially with Jack Roslovic. So I don't think it's ideal that he's not playing that, but the solution to that is, well, you need to earn the minutes to get the trust of the coach to go out there and play. You're kind of a victim of the game state at times. And there's just not a lot that Maurice is going to do about that because, you know, you want your best players out there to try and either hold a lead or increase your lead or, you know, answer the other team's attempted comeback. So it's a tough spot for a young player like Jack Roslovic. I think you don't want to stunt his development, of course. I think for Roslovic, I mean, he'll be the first to say, I mean, he's learning from this. And it's hard to see, well, what are you learning from barely playing? But, you know, you're learning that, you know, different things about how, you know, with limited minutes, like, you know, how can you be more impactful and that sort of thing. But yeah, you know, just in the long and short of, to answer your question, is, you know, you would like to see him more because the more that they play, the more the tough situations that they're in, that's how they're going to grow. But it's a tough balance. I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't have all the answers. It's a tough balance for a coach to do while you know, they're trying to win games and kind of make the playoffs and make another run at the Stanley Cup.
Scott Billick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Scott covers the Winnipeg Jets for NHL.com. You've also read his work in Pro Hockey Talk and in the Winnipeg Sun. Scott, with last night's performance, the Jets now have the number one power play in the NHL. 34.8% through 15 games played. Power play goals in 11 straight games. It's even better on home ice, operating at an insane 42.3% success rate. Is this the biggest weapon in the NHL? The Jets power play?
Oh, I think, yeah, I mean, hands down, probably. I mean, even, you know, I think they came into the game maybe second or tied for first.
Second,
33%. Yeah, and so you come into the game, and then, you know, a power play that's running as hot as the Jets is expected to cool down, and they managed to increase their, you know, their power play percentage last night. It's still early in the season and whatever, but, you know, it's just, I mean, the players talked about last night when referring to kind of Blake Wheeler and that, and just talking about the options they have, whether it's Shifley in the slot or Laine in the cross seam pass. You can feed it up to Dustin Byfuglien on the point, whatever you want. You know, it's just every point on that power play is lethal. And when you give them opportunity, they don't, like, look at, if you watch last night, they needed 15 seconds total to score two power play goals. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first goal was 8 seconds into the power play. The second goal was 7 seconds into the power play. Like, it doesn't get more lethal than that. Like, you know, you can't probably set it up any quicker other than a quick face-off win where you wire one past the goalie from, you know, the point or whatever, right? But, I mean, the ability and teams just, I don't know how you defend against it. I mean, you just hope for the best. Cross your fingers and hope that, you know, Laine misses or, you know, Shifley misses and that sort of thing. So is it the most dangerous weapon? Yeah, I think hands down it has to be. I mean, you don't want to take a penalty against the Winnipeg Jets right now because you likely know, well, you know, every three you take, one's going back in the back of the net. I mean, that's what the percentage says right now. And you saw last night, I mean, Colorado took some penalties that they shouldn't have taken, and then they paid for it. You know, that's how you win games. And so when the Jets haven't been playing as well, perhaps 5-on-5, that power play has just carried them like nobody else's power play has in the league this season so far.
Scotty, I wanted to ask you about Jacob Trouba. Jacob Trouba led all players in ice time yesterday for the Jets, that is. I'm not sure if anybody on the Avalanche had more ice time, but he was at 25 and a half minutes, and he was out there for over 5 minutes on the penalty kill. He also got out there on the second power play unit. But I wanted to ask you about Trouba's game as a whole in the first 15 games of the season. I know his offensive production hasn't maybe been there, but it's been a bit of a quiet start to the season for Trouba. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, I think there was times where we're sitting up in the press box wondering, you know, either where Jacob Trouba has been, or, you know, he was kind of in the mix of, you know, not necessarily, he's just not in the right spot on some plays that went against the Jets, I guess I'll put it that way. I think he's elevated his game a little bit more over, I'd say maybe the last, you know, 3 or 4 games, maybe even 5. You know, he's played well. If you look at his underlying numbers, they're pretty good. You know, great possession numbers, especially for a guy that's playing against, you know, he's part of the top shutdown line, one of the top shutdown lines in the defensive pairing, in the league. So to see him, you know, above 50% in shot share is still telling, even if it looks like Trouba isn't as, I don't know, engaged isn't the word. If you're looking at him, you don't feel like he's feeling it that night. Well, you know, he's still able to do a lot of things to kind of keep, the other team's best at bay. Yeah, I think he's played better. I think I don't know what it is. I think he's looked a little more engaged over the last little bit. And I always wonder how much this Finland trip played into a lot of players on this team. You talk about Blake Wheeler before last night. I mean, there was questions about, you know, even though Blake Wheeler was in the midst of an 8-game point streak, there was questions about, you know, his 5-on-5 game and that kind of thing, Patrick Laine, all that stuff. I think you're going to see probably a different Jets team now after that Finland trip, where they can finally just start to think about the regular season ahead and not have to think about this date where they're only going to play 2 games in basically 2 weeks and that sort of thing. And I wonder if that extends to Jacob Trouba, but I thought he started to play just a better game overall, to kind of vaguely answer your question. I don't really know exactly how to explain it, as much as to my eyes, he looks like he's just playing a little bit better back there. And the numbers, I think, show that.
You know, Scott, I'm going to ask you a question about the Kings, and even though this is a Jets segment, it'll tie back in.
Yeah.
Adam Oates was hired by the Kings,
yeah,
as a skills assistant. Of course, two of the guys he works with the Winnipeg Jets are Mark Shifley and Josh Morrissey. How do you think Oates' new relationship with the Kings, will that impact his connection now to Morrissey and Shifley?
No, I don't think so. You know, I wrote a story for this on NBC yesterday. I think it went up yesterday. Just talking with Mark Scheifele and Josh Morrissey, and Blake Wheeler's also involved with Adam Oates as well. Adam Oates at the end of the day is running a business that has pretty high caliber clients. When you look at it, you want to talk Jack Eichel, you want to Steven Stamkos' name is on that list too, and then obviously three of the best players on the Winnipeg Jets. I think Adam Oates is going to go into the Los Angeles Kings and do exactly what he's been doing for other players, just on, I guess, a more of a team level. I assume that Oates is going to go and look at all of the players in the same way that he would, but, Mark Scheifele, these guys, they're paying for this highly personalized skills development, skill training. I mean, Mark Scheifele, you talk to him, he's like, I text Adam Oates nearly every day. I mean, he's cutting video for me. He's pointing out little things that I can change in practice to help my game. Adam Oates is obviously a businessman now. He has a lot of clients, and I don't think he's going to sacrifice that to help the Kings. I think this Kings thing is just another chance for him to kind of expand his business and his hockey agency there. So I don't think it changes that. I think if Mark Scheifele is going to text Adam Oates at whatever unholy time he probably does to talk about these things, he's still going to be able to do that. I don't think it gets in the way, and I think that was part of the deal for Adam Oates. I think Pierre LeBrun from TSN reported that it was important to Adam Oates to still be able to carry on with his current client base, and so I think given that, I don't think you're going to see any sort of downturn or whatever in the type of stuff. These guys are probably paying pretty good money to get this kind of stuff, and at the end of the day, the consumer isn't going to want to. In this case, Scheifele and Morrissey, and these guys aren't going to want a lesser level of service, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Scott Billick covers the Winnipeg Jets for NHL.com. You can also read his work at NBC's Pro Hockey Talk and in the Winnipeg Sun. Scotty, appreciate your time this morning. We'll let you get back to your Saturday. Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah. All right, man. Talk to you later, guys.
Take care, Scott. When we come back, we talk about the Jets and the Devils. They'll do battle tomorrow evening. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.
Is wide. Connor Hellebuck will set a franchise high with his 35th win of the year as the Winnipeg Jets end the point streak of Taylor Hall and pick up their 41st win of the year and go 3-0 on the trip.
That was from last March. Dennis Bayak with the call. The Winnipeg Jets defeating the New Jersey Devils. These two teams, of course, played their final preseason game against one another, but it'll count in the regular season standings tomorrow evening as the New Jersey Devils visit the Jets. A game you can hear, of course, live on TSN Radio 1290.
Talk about weird schedule, Drew. Remember the Devils went to Switzerland after that game?
I do remember that. They played their final. Nobody understood that. To go from New Jersey to Winnipeg for a preseason game and then fly from Winnipeg to Switzerland. It was a bizarre road trip.
Like, you might as well go like New Jersey to Guatemala to Australia.
Yeah, not too far off. You're absolutely right about that. The Jets and the Devils, as I mentioned, do battle tomorrow. The New Jersey Devils, they're struggling severely right now. 2-7-1 in their last 10 games. They got absolutely embarrassed last night in Toronto, losing 6-1 to the Maple Leafs. They're now down at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, only 2 points ahead of the Florida Panthers. 6-7-1 on the season for the Devils. They got off to a good start, obviously. They were, at a point in time, they were 4-0-1. It has not been good for the Devils since that good start to the year. What's ailing the Devils from your perspective there, Mr. Ginsburg? It's well documented that you've been a New Jersey Devils aficionado since their heyday back in the 90s.
Yeah, Drew, and you touched on it. The Devils got off to a good start this year, and they're on this losing streak right now. And Brian Boyle had a hat trick the other night, and by the way, just a fantastic story
on Hockey Fights Cancer Night. Coming back from as a survivor of cancer, he gets a hat trick. That's a great story.
And not
right.
only a hat trick, a natural hat trick,
even better.
And Drew, how much I love the natural hat trick.
Well,
you just don't see them very often, right?
And it's a great story,
fantastic story, probably the best story of the year so far for the Devils. But for me, it's been a lack of secondary scoring. line, Dave. The top line of Nico Hischier, Taylor Hall, and Kyle Palmieri. Kyle Palmieri's already got 10 goals on the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that top line has actually been very solid for the Devils. And Travis Zajac is actually having a resurgent season for the Devils, of course, from Winnipeg, Manitoba. They just haven't been getting enough secondary scoring. And defensively, they've allowed the fourth most goals in the league. And, I mean, this is a Devils team that has prided themselves on defensive hockey. And I'm not talking about the late 90s, early 2000s. I'm talking about last year's Devils. You know, that was a big part of their game. They're a fast team, but, you know, they just haven't been getting that secondary support. And, you know, Corey Schneider just recently came back from an injury, and, you know, he had a really tough go the other night against the Ottawa Senators. He was pulled. I think he allowed four goals. And then Keith Kincaid came in, and, you know, Kincaid has struggled a little bit as of late, too. Yeah. So, you know, the goaltending hasn't been as solid as last year. And, you know, Schneider obviously coming off of that injury, you can't be too hard on him. I mean, Schneider's an excellent goaltender, but, you know, he's still trying to find his game early on this season. But, you know, that's a big story for me. After that top line of Hischier, Hall, and Palmieri, they've been struggling. Because the special teams have actually been very solid. The Devils are top 10 in the NHL in penalty kill and power play, but, you know, they just haven't been playing well enough defensively. And what they've been talking a lot about, and we'll talk to Matty Loughlin about it coming up here in about 10 minutes, I mean, their defensive zone coverage just hasn't been really good. You know, Will Butcher has struggled a little bit in his own zone. You know, they're still trying to find their game, and they're in a bit of a rut right now. I still think they can compete for a playoff spot, but, you know, they got to get more production from other lines, not just that top line.
Yeah.
Similar to Colorado, really.
That's what I was going to say, Dave, is that, you know, it's sort of a similar story. We know that that top line for the Devils has been performing well, not at the same level of the Avalanche top line, but Hall and Hischier and Palmieri have been driving the bus offensively for this New Jersey Devils team. And then after that, there's a lot of sort of unknowns and a lot of struggling happening. Zajac's having a nice year, but after that, it really does fall off for the Devils early on so far this season. And the Jets will look to keep that momentum going and sort of keep a wounded animal down tomorrow night against the New Jersey Devils.
I think the biggest thing right now is the goals. They need to score more. And like you guys just touched on, it can't just come from one line. You have to have, and obviously they had the hat trick from Boyle, but that's more of an anomaly than anything. And the fact is that, you know, they have, I think, 43 goals for, which is the least in the Eastern Conference, or at least tied for the least in the Eastern Conference with Detroit. So the fact of the matter is you have a team that's not scoring a tremendous amount of goals.
Yeah.
They're not giving up a ton either. They're actually, their goals against is relatively decent. But the fact of the matter is that you just have to score in this league. You can't win games 1-0. You have to be able to put the puck in the back of the net.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a one trick pony, then the reality is that teams learn the game plan against that one trick, and they will dominate you in the other three lines if they come on and don't do anything. So the fact of the matter is, from my perspective, and again, we don't obviously watch the Devils very much, but when you're just looking at the kind of the raw numbers with, mm-hmm. with New Jersey, it's a function of having to be able to get it done from other lines, or production from other lines. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. Small correction. The Panthers actually have the fewest number of goals, 38.
Yeah.
The Red Wings and the Devils tied with 43. It's actually been a tale of two teams for the Devils. At home, they've been very good. 5-1-1 on home ice for the Devils this year. It's on the road where they're struggling. 1-6 on the road. And I mean, if you're expected to win, you know, 60% of your games or 65% of your games at home, and maybe you go, you know, 50-50 on the road, you know, you're usually in a good spot. It's the road Devils right now that are absolutely killing them. I mean, I didn't watch all of the Devils Leafs game last night. Certainly I was at the Jets game, of course, but just watching the highlights of the Devils and the Leafs last night, the Devils just looked like a team that was lost. I mean, Keith Kincaid's giving up a goal from the point. I mean, the game was pretty much out of hand at that point in time, but it's a wrist shot from the point that
he had three guys screening him. The record, three of his own guys screening him.
Well, doesn't that tell you that, you know, it's not bad enough that one of your own guys is screening you, but three of your own guys are screening you. John Hines, in some of the post-game comments he's had as of late, you know, Amanda Stein, good friend of the program, has shared some of those that we've seen. It seems like a coach who's frustrated with this team and is unsure of how to get them out of the rut that they're in, because it really is surprising. They started so well. They had the great year last year where nobody really expected them to be a playoff team, and they came out, and Taylor Hall, of course, was a Hart Trophy winner. And then this year, it's really been a struggle so far. Quickly, as
21 goals.
Yeah.
to the Leafs, Senators, and Lightning.
That's not
21
good.
21 goals against.
That's not good. Is that what you're saying? That's not good?
Okay. I think it's an average of 7 goals a game. Has.
Quick math tells me you are correct. When we come back, Devils play-by-play broadcaster Matt Lachlan is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. More on the Jets and the Devils up next on your home for the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Matt Lachlan. Matt is the New Jersey Devils radio play-by-play broadcaster. Matt, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good Saturday morning, guys, and thanks very much for having me on.
Our pleasure, Matt. Obviously, we brought you on to talk about the Devils ahead of their visit to Winnipeg tomorrow evening. It's been some rough times for the Devils as of late, 2-7-1 in their last 10 after starting the year with a very impressive 4-0 record. What has gone wrong since the beginning of the season?
Well, it's very perplexing, and I know just a few moments ago you guys were running down a list of what has ailed New Jersey over this last stretch. I think what's mostly been missing, there doesn't seem to be, despite the fact that that top line is leading the team in scoring, they were a driver, and they're just not a driver yet. And by that, I mean the pace at which they play, the constant pressure that they put on last year just hasn't materialized. Yes, they're getting their points, but it hasn't been, other than the early start to the season where they went 4-0, there just hasn't been from that line that great lift. And then those behind them just haven't been able to continue any momentum that would in some cases be generated. But the real problem lately has been defensive breakdowns. They haven't been able to shut down a play along the walls. In this day and age, you can't hold people up. You can't hook them. So if teams start to be able to move around the perimeter a little bit, yeah, you can collapse, but all it takes is one guy cutting to an open lane and then you turn and you're beat and then somebody else tries to cover for you and then there's a backdoor play that's open, and the Devils have been killed on backdoor plays over the last 2 weeks. So, I guess it's a structure thing that they got to straighten out. They got to increase their compete level a bit. And it's not going to be easy. Nobody feels sorry for you in this league. You go from Toronto to Winnipeg at the end of a 7-game road trip, and what are you going to bring to the table?
You know, Matty, you mentioned the last couple of weeks have been a little bit tough for the Devils, but can we talk about, you know, one of the best stories thus far this year? Monday night, the Devils defeat the Pittsburgh Penguins 5-1, but Brian Boyle scores the natural hat trick on Hockey Fights Cancer Night. I mean, can you just talk about what that was like to call that and how that maybe is the best story of the NHL season thus far?
Well, Brian is such an engaging guy, humble, and, you know, he's spiritual, and he has gone through this battle that has obviously also included his family and everyone in his extended range. It's not just an individual battle that you fight when you're diagnosed with cancer. And coincidence or not, believe what you will, on that night he comes through with his first career hat trick, and it was amazing. And a performance against the Pittsburgh Penguins that the Devils would love to be able to duplicate a little more frequently, but he's such a good man, and he's thoughtful, and everywhere he's been, his teammates speak very highly of him, and that's not always the case. You know, if you move around a little bit, you're bound to rub somebody's feathers the wrong way, but that hasn't been the case with Brian, and it was just a special night, and, you know, I know he kind of looks up and tries to figure it all out and can't, and he just kind of, you know, he just kind of sighs at times and says it just is what it is. But, yeah, it was a really emotional night for the team and for Brian.
You know, Matt, the Devils have been without Jesper Bratt after he fractured his jaw in a freak accident, as the Devils described it. What is he going to bring now that he's back in the lineup?
Well, he brings speed, and he should bring compete, and he should bring a little more of the experience that he got as a rookie last year, where he understood the daily grind that takes place in the National Hockey League. He really slowed down at the end of last year. He was by far the most games he had played. And if you look at his numbers in the second half of the season, you know, not very appealing, just 5 points, one goal in his last 30 games. But he learned from that, he got stronger, and he had a terrific preseason. And I know that that doesn't necessarily translate, but the Devils are very comfortable with him playing that second line right wing role. So they're happy to have him back, but it'll take a while to knock the rust off. And he was okay at times last night, had some of that compete level that John Hines is desperately seeking from other people, but just not enough to lift the Devils' boat. But I think as time goes on here, he will be an important cog in the Devils' wheel.
Matt Laughlin is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Matt is the New Jersey Devils radio play-by-play broadcaster. The Devils into Winnipeg tomorrow evening to face the Jets. Matt, I want to ask you about a player who's not currently on the Devils' roster. He's down in the AHL with Binghamton. That's Pavel Zacha. He gets sent down after going scoreless, going pointless in his first 10 games of the year with the Devils. This is a guy who, of course, was a very high pick of the Devils, sixth overall back in 2015. How concerned are the Devils with his development?
No, I think it's fair to say that they are very concerned. He's still young, just 21, but he's had enough games under his belt where I think we know what Pavel, I think the Devils know what Pavel Zacha will be. He may never live up, he won't ever live up to being the sixth pick in that draft, but can he be a good, strong third line center, maybe give you some solid play for a period of time as a second line guy, help carry you until you find that spot? Yeah, absolutely. And he just wasn't shooting the puck. His confidence, you know, it's a roller coaster at times. And when it's high, he plays, you know, on his toes and he's engaged. And then when he stops scoring, it just drops and he doesn't find a way to get that B game going. And, you know, John Hines talked about the team not having a B game the other day. He said, listen, when we have an A game, we know we can play with the best in this league, but we don't even have a B game. We got to figure out when things go wrong how to compete. And the same message is true with Pavel. So are they concerned? Yeah, they want him to go down there and, you know, be an offensive minded guy. He can win faceoffs. He's very strong defensively. He's got a physical presence, but he's just not shooting the puck. And he, you know, Chico Resch, my partner on the radio, you know, when the announcement came in the next game, he said, you know, center can't shy away from the puck. You've got to demand the puck. And Pavel's play prior to his demotion was, don't give me the puck. And that just can't happen. So it's up to him. He'll be given the opportunity. How long he stays down there remains to be seen. But over the summer, I thought that second line center role was the most critical for the Devils because I, you know, you got Nico Hischier, you knew what Travis Ajek could bring. I thought Brian Boyle would be that fourth line center. They've moved him to the wing, but I thought they were pretty set except in that critical spot, and it hasn't been filled yet.
Matt, Corey Schneider, Devils goaltender Corey Schneider, of course, recently returned from an injury about a couple of weeks ago, and you know he had a rough start the other night against the Ottawa Senators coming off of that hip injury, but would you say that it's just going to take a little bit of time before Schneider feels like his old self?
I think that's fair to say. I think there is a question of how far he will come back. I mean, it's a fairly significant surgery that he underwent. Father Time is creeping up on all of us. And, you know, you look at Corey, he's 32, soon to be 33, and you wonder just how effective he will be. And that's not to denigrate his play, but where is he mentally? Will he be the goalie that we saw 5 years ago in the National Hockey League? Or will his skills be diminished and it won't be a scuffle, but he just won't be able to live up to his past billing? I think time will tell that. I don't know who John Hines is going to go with tomorrow. He hasn't gone with an every other game situation yet. It's whoever he feels gives the team the best chance. I think he may go back to Keith Kincaid tomorrow, but, you know, we'll see after practice today. He's generally pretty solid about announcing those things. But I think, yeah, Corey's got to continue to work at it. There's no doubt about it. And I think more than anything else, it's that mental battle, right? Because he hasn't won a regular season game since December. Now, there's a big period of time there where he was on the injured list, but it's been a long time. He did win a game in the playoffs, but it's been a long time since he's left a regular season game with the W. hung on his shoulder. And the more that goes on, the more it becomes an issue. So there are a few things there, but, you know, you guys know him. Great guy, will work very hard, has worked very hard to get back here. And, you know, hopefully we'll start to see some dividends soon.
You know, Matt, we can't have a show on the Devils and not talk about Marty Brodeur. Of course, he's being inducted on Monday. Maybe just share a thought as to what Marty Brodeur, you know, has meant for New Jersey and also what it means to have him back in the fold within the organization.
Well, it's great to have him back, right? I mean, what teams do is they embrace their past and they prop up their great players in their history. And, you know, when you're surrounded by that, it filters through to the current dressing room because the players who, you know, I mean, it's funny. Certainly, everyone on this roster knows who Marty Brodeur is, but there might be one or two who look up and see, you know, Ken Danico. I mean, because of what he does, they know who he is, but they may not remember him playing. You know, they were very, you know, this week gets younger and younger. You get kids who go, I don't really remember Ken because I was five. You know,
yeah,
when he was last in the limelight, type of thing. So. It's good to have them around because it reminds them of what this franchise once was able to do and the glory days. And so, yeah, it's really good to have Marty back in the fold. And, you know, what he meant to the franchise, just another part of the great list of Hall of Famers that put New Jersey on the map, that made New Jersey a feared destination, that the fans were able to really sink their teeth into. And there's a lot of Devil's pride. You know, we go around this continent, and whether it's tomorrow in Winnipeg or, you know, we'll be in Philadelphia on our next road game on Thursday. Wherever we go, there are a significant amount of Devils fans who show up to support the team. And it all goes back to that group that won that first cup in 95.
Matt Lachlan, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Devils, the New Jersey Devils, that is. They visit Winnipeg tomorrow night to face the Jets at Bell MTS Place.
Matty, sticking with Marty Brodeur, and you know, you've covered the Devils for so many years, and as you know, Brodeur's got, you know, the all-time regular season wins and the all-time shutouts. I mean, do you see anybody breaking those records anytime soon?
No, I don't. First off, on the shutout side, they want games to be more offensive, so it's more difficult to pitch those shutouts. And in terms of the wins, you know, Marty, there were seasons he played 78 games,
yeah.
76 games. He started 75 games. I mean, what goalie is going to do that now? I mean, caution is the word that's used. Like, oh, so-and-so's on a run. He might play in 65 games. That's too many. We better cut back his workload. Now, that might be, the stats may show you, the analytics may show you that that's better, a fresher goalie, et cetera. But, you know, who's playing 78 games anymore? I mean, things tend to kind of be on a pendulum, and so maybe it'll swing back one day, but it'll be a long time.
Matt, last question for you, and this goes back, you know, a couple off seasons ago, one of the sort of underrated acquisitions that I thought was Marcus Johansson coming to New Jersey from the Washington Capitals. And last year it was an injury riddled season for Johansson. I think he had a couple of concussions, if I recall correctly. And this year he's sort of off to a slow start again with, you know, 5 points in 13 games. Is this a player who's sort of, you know, trying to find himself again after what was almost a lost season in his first year in the Devils uniform?
I think there's some of that, certainly. I think there's also the factor of, you know, who's his center and can they find a fit there to bring the best out of him. I also think that, you know, he needs to be a little harder, quite frankly. He needs to be a little stronger. I mean, he certainly has the requisite skills and looks smooth coming out of his own end and gaining the zone. But now you got to get into those dangerous areas to score goals these days. And I won't say there's been a reluctance, but we just haven't seen what I think the Devils coaching staff hopes they'll see more of from him in that regard. So I think what the Devils have to guard against overall is it is early, but it's starting to get late. You start to know what your team is like after 20 games or around American Christmas, Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Devils are really in this slide and they're just trying to figure out, okay, is it just one of those patches we'll look back on and say, whew, okay, we got it early, but got it out of the way. Or is it indication that this is going to be a year that's going to fall short of expectation? So it applies to the team, and it also applies to players like Marcus Johansson.
Matt Lachlan is the radio play-by-play voice of the New Jersey Devils. He'll be in town tomorrow evening as the Jets and Devils will do battle, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Matt, always appreciate your time and insight. It's good talking to you, old buddy.
Hi, always a pleasure to be on with you guys. I remember when this show started, and it's gotten great guns. And by the way, thanks to the little cover of snow, just enough to let us know that it's hockey season.
Yeah, boy. Thanks, Matt. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, boys.
When we come back, we discuss Adam Lowry and his performance through the first 15 or so games of the season. Much more to come on your Winnipeg Jets and the NHL as a whole. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Morrissey has the 4-on-4.
The Winnipeg Jets third line center, Adam Lowry, getting a goal earlier this year. I believe that came against the Arizona Coyotes, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, the thumbs up from producer Sean Asora. So I got that one right. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. And remember, if you want Bernstein's delivered right to your door, I know you do, and perhaps maybe you want to send us some Bernstein's, you can do that. Go to their website, shopbernsteins.com. Citywide delivery, Bernstein's, without having to do anything, just sit by your computer, get it delivered to your door, and enjoy the goodness that'll be coming.
Drew, I know we're going to talk about Adam Lowry here.
Okay.
But I just got to go back, and you know how much I love Marty Brodeur.
Hang on, it's time for Ezzy's weekly segment where he expresses his love for Marty Brodeur.
But I mean, this weekend is all about the Martys, right? And Gary, I guess. And
it should be about Willie, I would think.
And Willie. Yeah. But I mean, Marty St. Louis, Marty Brodeur, Willie O'Ree. I mean, yeah. Jana Hefford.
Yeah.
She's going into the Hall of Fame. Gary Bettman. But we asked Matty Loughlin about the wins, and I just think these numbers need to be mentioned. Marty Brodeur, he had 125 career shutouts, which is just ridiculous. 691 wins. So 691 career wins. The next closest active goalie is Bobby Lou at 473. 218 wins away. Hopefully Luongo plays another couple years after this year, but he's not going to come close to Marty Brodeur, and I think Roberto Luongo would tell you that. Henrik Lundqvist is next after that at 436. 691 wins. I just want to put that into perspective. Like, that's crazy. That's 30 wins year after year after year with 40 wins sprinkled in there. I guess what my point is, Drew, is that I don't think anybody's going to touch that. Like, nobody's going to touch Gretzky's point total.
Yeah.
Do you disagree with that?
No, I'm just letting you keep going.
I think it's really incredible. You know, those numbers I don't think get talked about enough.
Thus concludes Ezzy's weekly segment of how much he loves Marty Brodeur.
Well, and I mean, you know, sure, you could argue that Patrick Waugh is the greatest goaltender of all time. You could argue that Dominic Hasek is the greatest goaltender of all time. But, you know, Brodeur's win record, I mean, it's one of those records in hockey that I think is just truly incredible.
No argument. I'm not sure anybody's going to argue with that whatsoever.
At what point did you fly to Toronto to give the speech, the welcoming speech for Marty Brodeur?
I think Kenny Danico's got that covered, though.
Yeah, I think Kenny will be okay. Though it's funny watching.
That would be the best, though. Like, Ken Danico walks up to the podium to speak, and all of a sudden, as he comes out of nowhere, and he goes, Ken, I got this.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the security guard comes up to me and says, how'd you get in here? Yeah.
Who are you, and what are you doing here?
And sir, why are you wearing no pants?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I said, sir, put some pants on, for the love of God, man. Anyways,
I'll be spending a night in a Toronto jail.
And the restraining order will be well worth it. Anyways, the segment was supposed to be about Adam Lowry and his impressive performance.
No, let's talk about Adam Lowry. I thought Andrew Berkshire had a great article in the Winnipeg Free Press talking about Lowry. And, you know, guys, we've talked about his face-off win percentage.
Yeah.
You know, it's close to 60%. Lowry had a great game again yesterday. You know, great penalty killer. You know, I think he's an underrated scorer. I mean, he's obviously not a guy that, you know, you're going to say is a, you know, elite playmaker, a guy that's going to play on the power play. But I think he's got underrated hands. And, you know, I think this year you're starting to see, I think, how truly great he is. You know, when you talk about the face-off win percentage and the fact that Paul Maurice, you know, decides to put Patrick Laine on his line alongside Brandon Tanev. Patrick Laine has struggled, whether it's been on the second line or the first line, and now his game's starting to come along. And I think Lowry deserves a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, you know, I don't disagree at all. I thought that, you know, I was curious about that move. when it happened. You know, you're thinking, you know, how does Line A fit with Tanev and with Lowry? But, you know, I think it's gotten Line A skating. And if there's one thing that Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev do very well, it's skate. And they move. And they know that to be successful in the NHL, they have to move constantly. And that's where Line A had been struggling earlier this year. So I think, you know, the influence of Lowry and the influence of Tanev and the work ethic that they put in night after night, shift after shift, because, you know, it's sort of Paul Maurice can count on that line to all of those players to always put in a workmanlike effort shift after shift has really rubbed off and gotten Patrick Line out of his malaise, as the expression goes.
Right, Dave. And Berkshire talks about this in his article. I mean, Adam Lowry is a guy that obviously, you know, doesn't come into the offensive zone with the same type of speed as a guy like a Nikolai Ehlers or a Blake Wheeler or Jack Roslovic. And, you know, you hear a lot about dump and chase versus possession, but, you know, Lowry is the type of guy, he'll dump the puck in, but he goes in and gets it. Mm-hmm. And Berkshire talks about that. He's so elite at puck retrieval. He's able to get that puck and he's able to keep that puck in the offensive zone. He's able to cycle. Brandon Tanev and Andrew Kopp have obviously been doing that with Lowry for the last couple of years, right? But Lowry's the type of guy, similar to Kyle Connor. Obviously, you know, Connor's got more speed than Lowry, but he's that type of player. He can be the driver of a line. And I think that's something that you're starting to see more, as opposed to, you know, just being known as that shutdown guy. I mean, Lowry has a very good offensive game. I'm not saying that he's going to score 30 goals and 60 points. But, not, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he scores 15 goals again this year.
Well, I mean, that's sort of where he's settled into that, to that sort of spot that, you know, and every team needs that goal scorer who's not, you know, your predominant goal scorer, but it's a guy who can get you, you know, between 15 and 20 goals,
right,
and just put in that effort and sort of, you know, there's a comfort factor. There's probably an extreme comfort factor that Paul Maurice has in putting a guy like Adam Lowry out on the ice, knowing that you're going to get a consistent effort
and
from
him. And
you
know what? I don't care if people think we're talking too much about Lowry. I love him. I've loved his game since he became a Winnipeg Jet. He's a throwback player. He's a great power forward, and he's been criticized, and, you know, people have said, you know, he's better suited off to be a fourth-line center. That's baloney. I mean, he can be a third-line center any day of the week for me.
His face-off winning percentage this year is what stands out to me. He's fourth overall in, you know, in face-off winning percentage, 58.1%.
That's elite.
Yeah, like
that's Patrice elite. Bergeron, that's Ryan Getzlaff type of stuff.
Well, he's right above Bergeron. Bergeron's at 56.5%, and he's right below Jonathan Toews at 58.5%. Now, you know, Lowry has taken a few fewer faceoffs than those guys have because Mark Scheifele, you know, often gets a lot of faceoffs as well, especially the offensive zone ones. But when Paul Maurice has a guy who you can put out in defensive zone situations predominantly, because that's where Lowry gets most of his zone starts, and you know that he's going to most likely win those faceoffs, there's a great comfort in that. And, you know, that's an ace up the sleeve of Paul Maurice, is the ability to deploy Adam Lowry in those situations and know what you're usually going to get from him in a game in, game out situation, David.
I think the word is trust. I think that he has implicit trust in Adam Lowry. And I think that he knows with Adam Lowry that he's going to get that reliability. I mean, we've used a lot of adjectives so far this morning to describe Adam Lowry. And I think it's fair to do, because I think the one thing he's shown in his game is just an interest in growing it. He's not a one-dimensional player, and I think that is really key. I mean, we've seen a guy who, remember, was sent down to the Manitoba Moose a few seasons ago.
Yep.
This is, you know, and sometimes that's a wake-up call. Sometimes that's an important wake-up call, you know, to show that your position isn't set in the lineup, that you have to do something to earn it. And I think Adam Lowry is a pretty bright guy on and off the ice. He's, you know, you hear him talk, you listen, he's in that Josh Morrissey mold. Like, you listen to these guys talk and you think to yourself, okay, well, they're not just speaking in cliches. They actually are fairly thoughtful in their answers to you. So, to me, Adam Lowry's a guy who's always kind of given, and perhaps that's obviously his pedigree with his dad being a longtime NHLer, but I think it's a function of just him wanting to continue to grow his game. I mean, and not being complacent and not be comfortable saying, okay, well, I'm going to be a fourth line center in the NHL and I can, you know, get my career, you know, I can make that my niche, is just be that guy. I think he's trying to develop his game into a greater responsibility role for this team, and I think we've seen him do it.
And I realized that, you know, last year when the Jets acquired Paul Stastny, I mean, that was just convenient, right? You're able to now have Brian Little as your third line center, Drew, and then Adam Lowry becomes your fourth line center. Mm-hmm. And he was, I mean, don't get it twisted, he was the best fourth line center in the NHL, because he's better than that. He's a third line center, in my opinion, and obviously Paul Maurice is the guy's guy whose opinion matters the most, right? But I think it becomes he needs to be talked about as a great player. And again, and I'm not saying he's in that same level as Patrice Bergeron or Ryan Getzlaff. I mean, you're talking about, you know, Olympians. You know, you're talking about the best centers in the league. But I'm talking about, you know, Lowry's game, as Dave has talked about, it's evolved. And he's become that all-around player. He's an excellent defensive player, but he's also a guy that can chip in some goals. And again, on a team that has Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Patrick Laine, Ehlers, Connor, you know, the names go on and on and on. He's not counted upon for primary offense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just think, you know, his game has really become a lot more consistent over the last 2 or 3 years.
His possession numbers, I mean, you talk about a guy who gets, you know, doesn't get offensive zone starts predominantly. His possession numbers, 56.15% Corsi 4 percentage over the last 2 years. So that's from the 2017-18 season through the first 15 games of this year. Second on the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. This is a guy who, when he's out on the ice, when Paul Maurice sends him out there, he basically dominates and controls the pace of play against his competition. And in this instance, and often probably throughout his career, it's not going to translate into huge offensive numbers. But to know that you can take a guy, start it in your own zone, and the puck is going to oftentimes end up in the opposition zone at the end of the shift, it is a great comfort for Paul Maurice and for any coach to have.
And, you know, guys, based on the last 4 games, because that's how many games Laine has played with Lowry and Tanev,
yeah,
I'm starting to think that, you know, this line might stick together for a little while here. I mean, I originally thought, you know, Maurice was going to keep this line together for maybe, you know, 2 or 3 games. But, you know, they had another good game last night.
Yeah.
There's no reason to think they won't be together tomorrow night versus New Jersey. So, I mean, maybe we're going to see this line for a big chunk of this season.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Good point coming from some of our friends on Twitter, from the Spinorama hockey guys, who say that the big center that Adam Lowry is provides more room for Patrick Laine,
yep,
which makes a lot of sense. You know, you pick your poison if you're going to, you know, who you're going to control, because, you know, Lowry and his body type matches real well.
Well, Tanev's not an easy player to play against.
Certainly
he's
not.
He's obviously not as big as Lowry or Laine.
But he plays a bigger game.
Right.
And Laine, of course, gets the room as a result. When we come back, we shift our focus to some of the officiating and some of the off-ice disciplinary questions. Our good friend Josh Smith from ScoutingTheRefs.com joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.